you don't look as vibrant and full of vim and joy as I would expect a man who's just come back off holiday, if I may say so.
Well, I mean, there's a number of things here. One, I woke up at 4:30 this morning. No. I haven't been back to sleep since, and it's now, what, 7 o'clock, and I've got to talk to you.
In the evening.
That's kind of, yeah. So I'm shattered. Two, turns out, actually, having sort of a holiday...
Yeah.
And then coming back for a week work before another holiday isn't the best way of doing a holiday, really.
No, not really. It's foolish. Yeah.
So here I am, pretty sort of tired and grumpy. Have you missed me?
Of course I have. No one moaning at me about anything. No one giving me a bad time. I could tell it wasn't a proper holiday, this one, because I didn't get any pictures from you. Normally you send some sort of gloating photos of the countryside or the wildlife or something, but... You just went dark.
Yeah, well, you wait till the podcast.
Oh, no.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 341 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page, and there's Joe Davis.
Hi, everyone. Great to be back with you after a two-week break.
Yeah. Very nice to be back. Yeah, sorry, I'm very tired. I don't know why I woke up so early, but I just did.
That's annoying.
That's it. I've got things to do. I've got things to do before I go away. I got a talk to give when I come back, so I started writing that. So basically, I'll be on top form for this one, I tell you.
Well, great.
Yeah.
You teed it right up. And isn't it weird doing it again at a different time? It's so strange.
Yeah,
7 o'clock,
yeah.
I've just had my meal. This doesn't feel like the right time to be doing a podcast at all. Sorry if you can hear my stomach processing, listeners. That's just the way it goes.
What a great opening we've given to this podcast. How excited people must be now for it. We got one grumpy old bloke and one grumbly old stomach. It's ridiculous. Anyway... Listen, with my usual sort of lack of forward planning, I've realised that the week after I come back, in other words, 2 weeks' time, I'm off talking at a conference for a couple of days. And so I don't know. I can't guarantee at the moment, listener, we're going to have a podcast that week.
Oh.
There might be a two-week break.
Well, in effect, it's three, isn't it, almost?
Well, no, well, maybe. But anyway, or Joe might pull a rabbit out of the hat and find somebody
shall.
To interview.
I shall.
Who knows? Who knows? It'll be a lovely surprise, won't it? Either way, we'll leave you in a state of uncertainty, really. It's about building faith, I think.
Exactly.
That's what it's about,
exactly.
Really. Yeah. Anyway, that's enough church notices and general rambling. How are you, my friend?
Oh, well, I'm good. Let's start with the bad news. My poor father-in-law had a stroke a couple of Sundays ago, so life has been thrown into general chaos and confusion, not just for him, but for the family as we try and process that. So he's currently in hospital, and I think he's probably going to be in hospital for quite a while. So that's the bad news. And obviously, it's lovely just to see... my wife's family, Rachel's family, just pulling together and helping. That's a beautiful thing. So there's that. But here's a thing that I wanted to talk to you about. I was in a prayer meeting, like a proper Baptist prayer.
I'm sorry to laugh. That is a very funny thing.
I know. I haven't been in anything like that for so long.
How did that happen?
Well, I was on the Baptist Pioneer Network Zoom.
Right.
Like you are.
I thought they'd sacked you.
No,
I thought they'd sacked you from the Baptist. I wrote letters. I lobbied.
They tried to sack me, but people wrote letters and lobbied, and I was reinstated.
Oh, the other way.
Unexpectedly.
Oh, I got defeated.
Yeah, you did. So anyway... So, but here's what I noted. I mean, it was interesting for a number of things that I'd like to talk to you about, which we won't do fully now. But one, I didn't mind in the slightest. So they just said, look, we're going to have a prayer time, they said.
Okay.
We're going to have a prayer time and we're going to pray for each other. And, you know, in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where you put the babelfish in your ear and it sort of translates any language.
Oh, yeah.
It was a bit like that. I had some sort of... you know, invisible babelfish in my head. And as they were talking and asking God to be glorified and everything, I was just translating it into my own language all the time.
Yeah.
And I sort of enjoyed it. I enjoyed both participating in prayer and listening to the other prayers and sort of translating them to ways that sort of made sense to me now.
That's great.
And yeah, it was just, I was surprised how positive I found the whole experience, because sometimes being amongst, you know, evangelical brethren can make me a bit hot under the collar.
But I think this is really interesting, because 2 weeks ago, when we were talking, one of the things I think you said there was about you'd found yourself compelled to pray.
Yeah.
When you were watching the news.
I know.
So, you know, I think something's happening. And I love the prayer babelfish. What a great idea that is.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody needs a prayer babelfish just to sort of translate the language.
Exactly, exactly.
Perfect.
And you just remember, I used to pray like that. I used to do that. This is not a problem. This is good. We're brothers and sisters here. We're all trying to serve the same God. We just understand things differently. It's all right. Anyway, that's good.
But how did they react to the seagull mask that you always wear when praying?
Listen, I've got something to say about seagulls in Worthing.
Oh, okay.
They're getting more aggressive. So.
Are they?
Rachel goes regularly shopping on a Thursday to Sainsbury's, as we all know. And
I don't think we all know that. But anyway.
And this, so she's wheeling the trolley from the shop back to the car. And a seagull swoops down over her shoulder and she can see it looking in the bag of shopping.
Wow.
And you think, oh no, does she really see that, or is she imagining it? Few seconds later, the same seagull does exactly the same thing, only this time it pulls out quite an expensive pack of ham from another person's shopping. And cue lots of screaming and stuff. And the seagull just runs off with a packet of ham. I mean, packets of ham are quite expensive.
That's amazing.
I know. They're organised and they're aggressive. And they're hanging out in the supermarkets now. And your shopping is not safe.
Awful, isn't it? Adolescent, you know, hooligan seagulls.
I know. It had a hoodie and it had its covered up over its head. And
yeah, terrible. So the Hitchcock's The Birds, but with added ham. Anyway, yeah.
So with all this calamity going on, the little ray of sunshine is that a very delayed 40th wedding anniversary present. In fact, we've been married 41 years now, but we're going to see Coldplay on Saturday. So that'd be lovely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's super.
There you go. Yeah. That's me. You're more or less up to date. Now, you've been on holiday. What's going on? Other than being very tired, how are you?
Well, I'm all right, yes. Holiday went okay. I mean, it wasn't really a holiday. It was taking my mother and my stepfather down to see my aunt and uncle. So, it was, you know, lots of 90-year-olds. Mum celebrated by breaking her toe, as you do. Not that we knew that at the time, but it turns out she's broken her toe.
Oh.
So that's handy. But it was nice. And Claire and I got some time to tootle off and do our own thing, which was lovely. And we went to Great Dixter.
Mm.
Do you know Great Dixter, the garden?
I've heard of Great Dixter. Yeah, maybe that's why. Maybe I have been there.
So a gardening writer called Christopher Lloyd. Wonderful house, but the most amazing gardens. I think some of the best gardens I've ever been in my life.
Oh.
And a really beautiful, but not sort of formal. He didn't do formal planting, so he didn't get sort of like the white beds and the blue beds, or, you know, the herbaceous borders of those kinds. So everything's crammed in and you get these wonderful bursts of colour. And they let some of it sort of overgrow in good ways, so that you might be walking along a path that's slightly overgrown with ornamental grasses hanging over it. You have to push through them.
Yeah.
And you feel really in contact with it. I just thought it was wonderful. Amazing place.
Great.
It's not far. It's in Sussex, actually. But yeah, well worth the trip. That's Great Dixter. Now, the other night, I don't know if you watched the Proms at all.
No.
Do you watch the Proms?
No, not really.
Okay. Okay. So there was a concert on Sunday night. I'll put a link in the notes of Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony. So I don't have to tell you. I'm sure you can just hum that.
Oh, yeah. I'm whistling that all day long.
I know you do. Anyway, Shostakovich, Russian composer. But what they did a sort of dramatized version beforehand because the whole orchestra had learnt it. So they weren't sitting down with music. They were standing up and playing excerpts. And what's more, they were moving around and they were being carried. Some while they played sort of excerpts and solos, there were kind of people lifting them up and holding them up in the air and even turning one flute player upside down.
Wow. That makes it a lot more entertaining.
Well, it was fantastic because it was a piece of physical theatre telling the story of how Shostakovich wrote this while he was under suspicion, how he would be up at nights sitting with a suitcase packed in case they came to arrest him and he didn't want to disturb the rest of the family. It's the most astonishing thing. Okay. It's brilliant. Have a look at it. It's just fantastic. Really great performance. I love that.
Shostakovich sounds a bit like you're sneezing, doesn't it?
It does a little bit. It's a great brand of vodka. And then I'm off on a proper holiday on Saturday. So I'm off to see the fjords, which would be lovely. So that'd be nice. Yeah,
that is lovely. Good. Something I've always wanted to do.
Well, I'll send them your love.
Well, do. And send your mother my love.
I will, yeah.
She's with the broken toe. And try not to break any toes yourself, I would say.
No, well, the trouble is she gets into fights. That's a problem.
Was she drunk again?
She gives people a good kicking, and I say, look, at your age, you shouldn't be doing this. At least kick the soft bits, I'm going. Anyway.
God bless you, Mrs. Page.
Yes. So there we are. So what have you got for me? What fascinating missives have arrived?
So here we go. Yes. We've had feedback from, well, first of all, Dan, who wrote in about his theses.
Oh, okay.
He says, I have three. One, love God. Two, love your neighbours as yourself. Three, drink good beer. He says, everything fits into these.
Well, there we are. I mean, we might as well stop the podcast here. I think that just...
I mean, there it is.
There it is.
It's a great summary.
I mean, that is all the reformation that anyone actually needs, isn't it? Right there. Actually, do you know what? Luther, who, of course, he lived in what used to be the Wittenberg Brewery, and he liked beer. So I think he'd have signed up to those three.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Thank you, Dan. Anyway, he did then go on. Well, he didn't go on. He sent a separate email that said, I'm in the middle of listening to your podcast 340, where you talked about when you feel despair, you cry out to God. He says, I can really relate to that because I've been feeling that way for the past few weeks, just about life in general and the world that I'm leaving my kids and possibly grandkids. He said, as I was listening and feeling this way, I drove past a young boy, probably in his teens, walking what I will assume is his grandfather across the street, holding his arm in support as they walked very, very slowly. He says it was just a beautiful moment that reminded me that not all is in despair in this world. As you know, I'm part of the Barley Brethren here in Vancouver, Canada, where we often tackle big faith questions, going on 12 years or so now, as well as supporting each other of life's often difficult journey. I cannot recommend enough finding a group that is willing to walk with each other, supporting each other as we go through our own mid-faith crisis. One of our early searching was through Nick's book, The Dark Night of the Shed, and we have continued to listen and talk about the themes that come up through your podcast. And that's from Dan.
Ah, really nice to hear from you, Dan.
Yes, it is.
Well, let's assume that it was his grandfather. And he was helping him, and it wasn't just some sort of
some old person he was dragging across the road,
forcing somebody across the road. But I love that. I think it's so important to find the light wherever we can find it.
Absolutely,
at the moment, and there is loads of light all around in these little moments. It's just we don't see it. And big up for the Barley Brethren. I love the Barley Brethren.
Yeah,
one of the things about them. So you may not people listening to the podcast may not know they're a group in Canada. I believe, and Dan will no doubt correct me if I'm wrong, that originally the mission of the Barley Brethren was six men, six beers, 6 weeks. Mm. That they were only going to meet for 6 weeks, discuss life, have a different beer each time. So 12 years on, things have certainly...
Well, that's over 600 beers, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that is a long 6 weeks, Dan. That's all I'm saying, you know. But great. One of the first sort of groups I came across who were really doing things very differently, and I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
Yeah, great. Roz wrote in and said, Hi, Joe and Nick. I'm late off the mark with my response. As a scientist, I see a fundamental difference between scepticism and cynicism. Remember, we were talking about this a few weeks back. Skepticism is fundamental to science. It's a defence against gullibility. While still having an open mind, skepticism is always questioning, which is a good thing. It means you want to see all the evidence, consider the arguments, and then are willing to be convinced by the weight of evidence. This does not mean there's no doubt. Few things are 100% certain. Cynicism, on the other hand, is less open to being convinced, even when there's overwhelming evidence. Denialism goes one step further and refuses to be convinced and are locked into their worldview. A denialist only considers the arguments that support their case and is selective in what they will accept as evidence, known as cherry-picking the data. This is evident in climate denialism. It can also be true of some scientists and clinicians who hold certain theories and have a lot to lose if proved wrong. In short, cynics are not fun to be around, but sceptics make you think. Don't get me going on denialists, says Ros. Yeah. That's helpful, I thought. Thank you, Ros. Really appreciate that.
I think we did draw that distinction. I seem to recall talking about it, that scepticism was different to cynicism. But I do like that. And, of course, you can find denialists, you know, in all types of walks of life, can't you?
Absolutely.
You don't, they're not always on one side or the other.
No, absolutely.
But, yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. And then beloved Gillian Ewan wrote in, blah, blah, blah. I'll cut all that out. Sorry, Gillian Ewan. And he says, we have moved a long way from our evangelical salvation stance and stand with you in showing others as best we can that a belief in a loving, kind, gracious and forgiving God is not only better for them, but better for our world and all its people, as well as the environment. Is there a point at which they say, that's for me? As Nick suggested, a turning point. But if that's the case, then are we not just calling salvation something different and leaving out the sin and forgiveness bit? God loves all and Christ died for all. Who are we to say different? Thanks for your continued help and support. And that's from Gillian Ewan.
So what do you think?
Well, it's one of those things. I mean, I do write back to all emails, as you know. And I mean, I wonder whether salvation is broadly speaking now, when we start to taste and see reality as it truly is, like here and now. And for me, salvation looks like growing in my understanding that God is love. Mission for me looks like being a channel of that love to the world. I don't think I can judge who's a sinner and who is good, because we all seem to be both of those things. And yes, some sin does seem to carry far more consequences, but I'm sort of trusting the divine to sort that out as we go. So I truly hope nothing and no one is ever lost. I do believe that God will redeem the whole cosmos, everything and all people and all things. So I think that what salvation looks like now is you start to see clearly. It's like you're awake. You see things as they are now and, you know, start to see through a glass slightly less darkly, as Paul might have said.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing. I think it's a bit like the prayer Babel fish.
Really. Oh, right.
Because we use these words, but actually as time goes by, they get broadened in their translation. Mm. They get changed. And so you have abstract words like salvation or rather words for abstract terms like salvation or judgment or even maybe something like wrath, you know, that. And it's understood in one way in the first century, and then it's understood in another way later on. And then somehow it gets sort of stuck in that form. They get fixed in one form. So salvation only becomes about sin management.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And at best, that can only be part of it.
Yeah.
It seems to me.
Yeah. Absolutely. And
I think in my reading of these terms and the way Jesus talks about it, when I look back, it seems to me that salvation is much bigger than that. Mm-hmm. That's part of it, but it's not the whole picture. You know, in the context, it's about life. I mean, what does it mean to be saved? Gosh, perhaps we should talk at length about this another time. But I think, well, one of the ways of salvation is that you see a way out.
Yeah.
You know, there is a light for you. There is some path to follow. Yeah. There is a way out of what the life that you're in.
And wasn't Jesus particularly ambiguous about what salvation looked like? Because, like, Zacchaeus suddenly agrees that he's going to give back, you know, triple. And Jesus just goes, well, salvation's coming. He didn't say what that was, but he just knew it had happened. And then thief on the cross, or, you know, there, I'm sure there's many examples where we know salvation has happened, but we don't quite know what's happened other than there's been a change in someone.
I think we should talk about this at a future date. We should pick it up. But I think, no, I don't mean to stop it now. I'm just saying. I want time to think about it. But I think it's broader than that. It's so much bigger. And this, I think, has been the problem with some forms of Christianity in the past, and perhaps even now, is that if we just think about it as, well, I'm saved now and that's it.
Yeah.
Then, well, what's the point of hanging around much or doing anything very much?
Yeah, you know? That's right.
Why not just take me now? Because I think salvation is a process. I see a way out. I'm seeing a way to be saved. And that is ongoing every day, you know.
And
I have been saved and I am being saved, I think.
Okay, well, I'm just going to bookmark this because we should talk about the revival that is happening, that people are getting extremely excited about. Lots of young people coming to faith, particularly young lads coming to faith. And we might say, praise the Lord, hallelujah. And I do think it's a great thing if lots of young people are starting their spiritual journey and going to church. I mean, that surely can't be a bad thing. But I think, as we were encouraged by Roz, I think we can be sceptical about some of what this means and what's going on, because a lot of young people, as we know, are being very much radicalised by the right as well. And we ought to be thinking about that as well, I think, because there may be certain cultural factors at play.
Well, funnily enough, I've got an article which touches on this very topic coming out in Christianity this very month, I think, soon. So again, when we get back, maybe we'll talk about that, because this sort of so-called quiet revival is going on. I have to say, from my perspective, it's very quiet. You can hardly hear it at all, to be honest, but there you go.
Okay, thank you. Mark wrote in and said, hi Jonah, he says, in the rectum episode, as it is now called, I say.
Excellent. My work here is done.
Do you know what? It made me happy just to say that. So thanks, Mark. That's it. Shall we bother with the rest of the email?
Well, do you know what? When I put the title up of that episode, because I put that sort of rather daft acronym out, and of course, because it's got a sort of redeemed, elected, or Christian, just whatever, I suddenly thought maybe people would take that seriously and think I actually genuinely think I am elected.
Will. Yeah.
Anyway, there we go. They'll have a shot when they listen to it.
Anyway. Thank you, Mark, for that opening, you know, phrase. In the rectum episode, Nick mentioned that the woman who was healed of her bleeding probably had a lot of emotional healing to go through. This caused me to stop and think. It says, I've recently completed 18 weeks of chemotherapy, been told I'm in remission and should recover fully, which is great. I realised after listening to the podcast that I'm a long way off emotional healing.
Yeah.
I find myself incredibly sad at times and unable to control my emotions, often with no idea why. I had assumed everything would go back to normal instantly, but it won't, and I just have to wait. In amongst your frivolity and fun, you do bring great insight. Well, occasionally, he says. Keep up the good work. Oh. Thanks, Mark. Bless you. And we really are wishing you a full and healthy recovery. But thank you for writing in with that, because that's so true. Emotions take much longer to catch up. The act of emotional and well-being and healing is often much longer, I think, than the physical.
Well, I mean, I bless you, Mark. Bless you, mate. But I think I can't speak from any personal experience, but I've seen friends go through it. And of course, it's the mind and the body are joined. They're not separate. Mm. And maybe this touches back on salvation, you know, that it's not just one moment. It's a whole process going on of healing and repair and rescue that happens in these people's lives.
Yeah.
You know, that for you talked about Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus comes down. But he's got a whole load of choices to make from then on about being a tax collector, not being a tax collector, following Jesus, not following Jesus. You know, should he carry on going up trees? Because that's proved dodgy. You know, emotionally, psychologically, there's a whole process going on. And the same is true of all our lives' experiences. Mark, I pray and hope you'll be fully recovered, mate. But I think you'll be changed.
Yeah.
Because I think that's inevitable, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah. There's always so much restorative stuff that goes on in our lives. It's a lifelong learning, isn't it, really?
And I might just add here, to anyone else who's having chemotherapy or radiotherapy at the moment, who's struggling, you know, who's dealing with cancer and everything, our hearts are with you. We love you and we wish you well. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Wendy says, this is great. Wendy, hi, Joe, says, I've been an avid listener to the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast since the beginning.
Good Lord.
And it's definitely my go-to podcast to listen to. Bless you, Wendy. She says, I've never emailed before, but I did want to pass on the details of a free newsletter that I read called Fix the News. During the How Are You section of the podcast, both you and Nick are often despondent about the state of the news and how negative it is. This free newsletter has been a great leveller for me when reading the news and giving hope when all we hear is bad news. There is good news out there, she says.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I should say that the Fix the News newsletter, I think, is now a Substack. So if you search Fix the News Substack, yeah, it's great. And I've read some of it and it is excellent and I intend to keep reading it. So, Wendy, thank you so much for that. It really is. It's full of good news stories that are happening because they never get reported. All we get is bad news. But here is something sharing really good things that are happening in the world, because there are lots of good things going on.
There's another magazine called Positive News.
Yes, yeah.
That I've read in the past, and that's nice. Again, lots of good stories. Not sort of, you know, head in the sand stories, but stories of people making a real difference.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, one more bit of feedback, and this is from beloved Catherine, who says, I've been reflecting on both sacraments and theses, she says. And bless you, Catherine. She says, it strikes me that sacraments are particularly helpful in mid-faith because they are things that you do with your body. So while all the intellectual certainties are falling apart, they provide a way to still join in and be part of things. You don't need to assent to any particular theological propositions in order to eat bread and drink wine, for example. She says, you just do it. Oh, this is brilliant. Thank you. And then Catherine goes on to talk about how different the world is now compared to the time the Bible was written, and how so much of what it says, especially regarding cosmology and stuff, just doesn't fit with what we know today. She also talks about how much more we know about science, evolution and energy, and asks if we have any suggestions of authors and thinkers who have been thinking about these things. Please let her know. Do you know of authors in particular who are writing to that?
What about those issues?
Yeah.
I'm not an expert on those. I think our other people would know more about the whole science. Well, you probably know more about authors who've been writing on science and stuff. But I think the point she makes about sacraments.
Yes, absolutely brilliant.
And the sort of the embodied nature of them is really important. And in fact, I've been reading a lot about that recently. That's really what I wanted to sort of just muse on this week a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I've been thinking a lot about ritual.
Yeah.
And I know I've mentioned this in past weeks, basically, because it's been on my radar so much. And the need for us to have ritual in our life.
Yeah.
Really. A lot of this comes from a book I was reading called The Ritual Effect, which I'll put a link to, which is a neurologist or a writing about sort of rediscovering the importance of ritual, looking at it in secular terms, you know, the everyday rituals that people have.
Yeah.
And what is the evidence for the efficacy of those things? And I suppose I got thinking about it partly because of my own work patterns and my own less is more theme.
Yes,
and trying to build more ritual in.
Okay.
But partly because, you know, you're aware in your life you go through certain things. So, you know, like holidays, there's certain rituals of how you do things almost. Yeah. Like some people go to the same place.
Yes.
A lot. Yeah. Oh, you do, don't you, sometimes, you know.
I've done.
Why do you do that? Presumably those places have a meaning for you.
Exactly. They mean so much. And in fact, the journey becomes a big part of the ritual. And, you know, for example, if you talk to our kids about always going to the same place in Cornwall when they're younger, they said they love that, getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And
it built
so much excitement going. And then we went back to the same place and we met with the same people. And we went to the beaches we loved. And, you know, the thing about going to a different place every time is you don't know what all the really great places are and what the less good places are. But if you go to the same place, you get to know all the really great places.
Yeah.
And then you can sort of, you know, edit them together quite well.
And also what gets layered onto this is all the previous visits.
Yeah.
So the ritual itself, the visiting of the same places, brings into the present the past.
Yes.
It retells those stories.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And that, I think, is a key bit of ritual that actually, and it's certainly in biblical terms and in sort of ecclesiastical terms, that it's telling a story from the past that is powerful in the present.
Yeah.
And it's connecting us with our past. Mm. And so I think that's really important. And I think that's one of the reasons Catherine's right, I think, about mid-faith crisis. So many people in mid-faith crisis go back to rituals or embrace rituals for the first time.
Mm.
And there's something, I think, about the mystery of it, about the meaning, and about the fact that it isn't about a lot of sort of words.
A lot of intellectualism. No, not necessarily at all.
Because the point of a ritual is to evoke a feeling. The book makes the point that rituals are not habits. Rituals can be habitual.
Yeah.
Oh, what a lovely rhyme. But they're not. But that's different. So you might have a habit of getting up and cleaning your teeth every day. That's a habit. But unless you're actually imbuing that action with some significance, some meaning.
Okay.
That's not a ritual.
Okay, that's helpful.
You know, a ritual is something we give a specific meaning to, or we add in the way of thinking about it that builds depth. And so one of my rituals is coffee.
Yeah, yeah, I get it.
And making the coffee in the morning is what I've added into that is the smell, the thankfulness, the moment of joy. You know, what was talked about at the beginning, these small moments of joy. And to use that as a way to remind myself that actually it's good to be alive.
Yes, brilliant.
It's good to be functioning. It's good to be able to get out of bed and put your trousers on unaided. All this is great. Yeah. You know, praise the Lord for this. And to pray through it. And so, you know, that ritual is important to me now. That's moved from beyond habit. We do it every day, but it's got a deeper meaning.
Yeah.
And so I think I don't want to say a great deal on it, but I just think that one of the issues we've got as a society is that as we have abandoned a certain set of beliefs, we've abandoned the rituals that go along with that in a sense bind us together.
Yeah.
And so what do we do?
Yeah.
What do we replace them with?
Yeah, that's great. And you know, it's funny because I was saying to Richard, you know, one of the things we very intentionally do on a Sunday morning is we make sure we get out in nature somewhere and study the trees and the, but you know us, the butterflies and the, you know, whatever nature is around. And that has replaced the ritual of going to church every Sunday in the traditional sense. Because as we've often said to people, you know, some people, you know, get so despondent about going to church. They actually, you know, go to church in a good mood and come out in a bad mood sometimes, you know, and so they stop going to church, but that is an equally dissatisfying situation to be in, because suddenly there's a great loss. There's a loss of community and there's a loss of... So I think you're absolutely right when you say, actually, that ritual's gone. But you know, rituals are helpful to us. What's the new ritual that is life-giving and that is appropriate for this season of our lives? I think that's a really healthy thing to ask.
And this is where the emotional response comes in, because what kind of emotional response is it provoking in you? You know, I think if rituals lose their meaning, they become mere habits, and then they don't no longer provoke an emotional response, or perhaps they provoke an angry response, not a helpful one.
Yeah.
So they're not helping us to engage more with the better senses, as it were, with the better parts of ourselves and the better parts of each other.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that rituals do, especially sort of the little rituals that we have with friends, you know, and I think this is why they're worth sort of reflecting on and not overburdening them, you know, not turning them into something heavy, but actually recognizing how important they are. You know, I I think they put us into the moment. And there was this quote in the book from an author I don't know called Priya Parker. And she talks about the rituals of friendship. And she says it means reveling in friendship and conversation of a kind that Facebook doesn't do. Being thickly in one place, not thinly everywhere.
Oh, wow. That's a great phrase.
Isn't that great?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And at its best, that is what church does for us, I think. You know, it makes you thickly in one place and not thinly everywhere. It you know, at its best, that's what it does for us. At its best, that's what prayer does for us. Yeah. And these rituals can help us do that. And what you were talking about going out and experiencing nature and in a spiritual way...
Yeah.
Puts you thickly in that place, as it were. You know, and there's few people who can be more thickly in a place than you, Joe, if I'm honest.
Yes, exactly. And may I say, you are my very thick friend.
I love it. Thank you very much.
Because we run deep together.
We do. And we have our little rituals together when we meet up, our little habits. The other thing that came out in this book, which I think is really important, and maybe this is part of the thing that the church lost, is that rituals are a way of, they transform the ordinary. Mm. So a lot of the rituals that people build in their lives, whether that's like the Friday night, you know, drink with your partner or whatever, or the walk outside in the woods or whatever, they're ordinary things. They're just using the everyday things around them to connect with the divine, I think, connect with something bigger.
Yeah.
What we tend to do with church is that we lose sight of the ordinariness of the symbols.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so when you look at the ritualistic elements of Christianity, they're pretty ordinary stuff. They're bread and wine and water. And oil. We talked about this, a couple of weeks ago. And yet we take that and we turn it into sort of communion wine.
Yes.
Wafer.
Yeah.
And water in a font and holy water and chrism, sacred oil.
You're slightly missing the point. Yeah.
Yeah, I love all this stuff. You know, I do. But equally, we shouldn't ever lose sight of the fact that it's ordinary stuff. Mm. You know, one of the things that I take from my encounters with persecuted Christians is that they can't get hold of the posh stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they'll do communion with some crackers and some orange juice or whatever there is there, because it's not the elements themselves, it's the meaning that they're giving to them.
Yeah. Well, I love what you're saying. And I love that idea about not being spread thinly everywhere, but going thick. And, you know, in some ways, I wonder whether this takes us back to what Dan was saying about his group, you know, and the Barley Brethren, you know, like that beer that they have is actually very sacramental, because it's more than a beer. It's a real group of friends, and it's a celebration of that friendship. And I think certainly for me, and I'm guessing for you, the older I get and the more I go on, I think I want less relationships, but the relationships that I have, I want to be truly authentic, places where I can be who I really am, except for them, and where I can accept others for who they are, a warts and all, you know, but truly accepted. And that surely is sacramental, because isn't that what God does with us? Accept us as we are.
Yeah, so that's really all I wanted to say. I'd love to hear from people about their own rituals.
Yeah.
Whether they're sort of you know, Christian rituals, or whether they're relationship rituals, or whatever they are, the things that mark a passage of time, or that help them be much more firmly in the moment and much more present to one another. I'd love to gather ideas about that. That would be great.
Well, please do send in your rituals to joe@midfaithcrisis.org, and we will read them out in 1 or possibly 2 weeks' time.
Yes.
Or 3 weeks' time.
I do apologise for
definitely
my terrible...
Definitely not 1 week.
my terrible planning. I do apologise for my terrible planning. Do you know what? I'm going to go and talk at a big sort of conference of booksellers and all that kind of stuff. And I haven't done that for years.
No.
And I think it's just because my publisher wants to remind them I'm still alive. Barely sure that's all it is.
Well,
anyway.
Well, good for you. We're excited for you.
Yeah, well, I should pay for them, please. I don't have much energy for it. Anyway, yeah, so we will be back with you, as Joe said, in a couple of weeks. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. For your friendship and for all the great thoughts that you send us.
Yeah.
Thank you to everyone who supports the podcast. That's absolutely marvellous. We're really grateful for that. Thank you to everyone who recommends the podcast to other people. Yeah. That's a lovely thing. And we'll be back with you soon. I'm off to see the fjords.
Wonderful. Bless you, mate. Have a great time. And we'll see you all glorious people next time.